From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Hope all of you are having a great Friday to close the work week. Here I am in the Clark Ford studio back in Oxford. Neil is in Chicago. He and his son taking in a weekend. Another loss for the Cubs last night. It is fairly remarkable. We'll get into that and more today on the podcast. Yesterday, thanks for giving us the day off. Both had stuff going on. I went to Memphis to watch Braden Thornberry, Jonathan Randolph, and some other ones in the first round of the St. Jude, FedEx St. Jude Classic. So, anyway, Neil was traveling early yesterday, so a lot to get to today, some different things. It's a little bit of a Friday podcast. There's no big news today, at least as of right now. I think some today is possible. However, to this point, as we were recording at 8:52, because I couldn't find headphones this morning, we're a little later than normal, but nothing popping to this point. Podcast is always brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Check them out for the Plenty Cart, PLENTI.com, to see all the different retailers that can help you out there, Hulu, Nationwide, American Express, Rite Aid, and more. So if you don't check them online, you can also go in at any credit card location in Mississippi. You sign up for the card, use it at the pump, use it inside the store, and you save money. So do that. Get the $4.99 lunch specials every single day. Get the ribs at night. A lot of stuff going on there at the Oxford Exxon, next door at the Oxford Crystal as well. They've got the mix and match 5 for 5 that now includes the country fried steak. It includes the fried chicken and more at the Oxford Crystal. And again, Clark Ford Studio.
We are coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. At least Chase is. 662-257-1900 is the number. You call Clark Ford. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. You get the deal, you shop it around, or you get the deal and you say, that's perfect. And then you let Clark Ford and all the people there do for you what they have done for so many podcast listeners all over the South, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. At the end of your deal, say, hey, I heard about it on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden podcast. Either one, $500 off the already great bottom line at Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900 or clarkfordinc.com.
There is a beer garden up on the site at rebelgrove.com. Tony Jones of the Salt Lake Tribune is the guest. So if you're into the NBA, that is up and something you should check out. So that's there at rebelgrove.com. Also rebelgrove.com.
You like NBA, you should listen to that one. It's really good. It's not just jazz centric. Tony's terrific, and he was great the other night when we talked. So if you like the NBA or just looking for kind of a break, it's really good.
So that's there. Also on the site at Rebel Grove, I spoke with Mike Clement, the Ole Miss hitting coach, a couple days ago. There is a very spirited thread you can join in to discuss the merits or lack thereof of the Ole Miss offense. So again, there at rebelgrove.com. Also got a great relationship advice thread on rebelgrove.com. Did you see that this morning, Neil?
I saw some of it last night late, but I haven't checked up on it this morning. Is everything okay?
We'll get to it. I've asked some questions. I've gotten some answers. It will be a podcast topic before the hour is up, so I'll get to that soon.
Great.
On a much heavier note, condolences and thoughts with the Mississippi State people that listen to the show and just in general. Hank Flick passed away, the longtime public address announcer for Mississippi State Athletics. If you are a State fan or if you've ever been to Scott Field, you know kind of the nasally voice that for years personified that there at Davis Wade Stadium. He passed away. Also, I've got a lot of friends that said he was a very, very gifted professor at Mississippi State. So, again, thoughts with them. Dan Wolken on the podcast next week. That kind of came about through Twitter, so he'll be on Tuesday or Wednesday for that. So check that out. As we've talked about Dan some, Dan listened, and we'll talk to Dan on the podcast ourselves next week. So check in for that. Neil, okay, 0-6 for Carson now.
Yeah, I went back and traced it last night. He's 0-6. He's been to 6 Cub games in person. And I might be missing one. I know he hasn't seen a win.
How many in Chicago? All of them?
No. I saw one in Atlanta. They lost.
But that was a bad Braves team.
Yeah, it was a bad Cubs team too.
Okay.
He saw Cubs Pirates 6 years ago. Pirates won. He saw
some Cubs Rockies in there somewhere.
He saw two Cubs Rockies games last year.
Okay.
Carson's not a big fan of the Rockies. He saw two Cubs games against the Rockies last year. They lost both. He saw game three of the World Series. Cubs lost. And then he saw last night the Cubs lost 4-1. Jimmy Chatwood, who had an ERA of about 5 coming into the game. Carson has seen Jimmy Chatwood pitch two different times in Jimmy Chatwood's career. Jimmy Chatwood would be advised to buy Carson. He really would. He would be advised to pick up Carson and I and just have us travel around and go to his starts. He's damn good in our presence, I'll tell you that.
I'm just amazed here because, okay, let's in general, the Cubs are good. They're better than the teams they're playing in the last couple of years at least.
Yeah, they won a World Series. I saw the trophy yesterday, yeah. And it appeared to be real.
So they have a more than 50% chance to win games these days, especially at home. Okay, they had a 50% chance to beat the Braves at least, even though both teams were bad and the game was Atlanta, whatever.
40-something percent, but sure.
Okay. Essentially, Carson has lost 6 straight coin tosses where the coin is a little bit in his favor.
Yeah. He's lost 6.
Essentially, he's a blackjack dealer that keeps losing to the person across the table. It's about the same odds.
He's approaching the point where the company would fire the blackjack dealer.
You're really hoping for a win at some point this weekend, aren't you?
I'd like a win this afternoon. That would be really nice. Kyle Hendricks got scratched from his start. That's probably not the best sign.
Maybe Jimmy Chatwood can pitch for the Cubs today.
Yeah. If I'm the Cubs, I'm signing Jimmy Chatwood somehow, somewhere. It's really weird, man. I mean, we had great seats last night. His stuff was electric. I mean, he made one mistake. He had Bryant 0-2 in the first, and he was – I hate waste pitches, by the way, a pet peeve. Just go get the guy. I understand nitpicking around the zone, but he tried to go up in the zone on Bryant 0-2, thinking he'd change his eye level or whatever.
Just a little bit here. You do know it's Tyler Chatwood. Jimmy would be Jimmy Chitwood from Hoosiers, right?
Tyler Chatwood. Well, there you go. Shows you just how –
I thought you were making a joke, but then you said it the second or third time, so I'm just clarification there.
Could be because the guy that was sitting near us was yelling Jimmy at him all night.
It's clever. It's clever.
Yeah. anyway, he got the 0-2 fastball. He's trying to throw it high, and he didn't get it quite high enough, and Bryant hit it out. And then after that, man, he just didn't make mistakes. He threw a lot of ground balls. I think Brett Taylor tweeted that he now has the highest ground ball percentage rate in the National League. Got out of a lot of innings by just having had really good sinking stuff. He was really good. He was fun to watch. Lester was good too, but he got in trouble in the second. He gave up a little dribbler to the catcher, gave up a bloop to Charlie Blackmon, and then left one over the plate to DJ LeMahieu, the former LSU star. He crushed it.
Yeah, I remember him.
And then the most impressive thing, we didn't see the Cubs take BP. We saw the Rockies take BP. Nolan Arenado's BP. Holy God.
Could hit it a little bit.
I would love to see the exit velocity on his BP.
We've talked about it. I still maintain it. I get the health and the safety risk and the things you would have to do. I want to put aluminum bats in these people's hands for the Home Run Derby. I stand by it.
I do too. Now, you'd have to get people out of the outfield because I watched people.
You think you have to get them out of the outfield?
Yeah. I watched people. I'm telling you, last night, I watched Arenado's entire BP and I watched people two-thirds up the way. We were standing down the third baseline because Carson wanted to get autographs.
Okay.
And so he's down on the front row. And honestly, I was like terrified. But I'm up 15, 20 rows up in the first level, just sitting there, letting him have his fun and watching Arenado. And so I say that to say where I was, I had a really good view of the left field bleachers at Wrigley. And he's hitting balls on a line, Chase, like a jet plane, not a majestic fly ball. You know what I'm talking about? A supersonic jet taking off. Hitting them on a line two-thirds of the way up into the bleachers, and I'm watching people stick their hands out, and you can hear the impact of the ball on their hands.
Is it a slap or is it a thud?
A little bit between the two.
Okay.
Where, I mean, I guarantee you somebody out there broke a hand last night. No chance it didn't happen. I mean, you put aluminum in a guy like Nolan Arenado's hands. I mean, old school aluminum. Oh, my God. I can't.
Yeah, like drop fives.
I think he'd hit it 600 feet. But what's of more interest is how fast the ball would go.
Yeah. How did Carson handle last night? I saw you compliment Ben Zobrist, but as far as just the loss in the game.
He was fine. He cheered all the way to the end. Derek Holland closed it out for the Rockies, but not without Carson yelling at him the entire inning. he was fun. He had
it. What sucks about that for a kid is it's not just the loss, but was it a two-hitter? I mean, you don't even get into the game. You don't even see the offense. It was kind of like the World Series game. It's just blah.
Yeah, they had some opportunities to get, you know, a rally, but he got double play balls. He just threw ground balls. You know, got Al Moore to hit into a double play. I think he got Hayward to hit into a double play. But he got Ben Zobrist autographed at the end. Ben Zobrist is one of those guys who appears to be genuine. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a reputation for being a great guy and all that stuff and has had it for a long time. Watching him last night, it appears to be the real thing. So that it was Ben Zobrist, they gave away a bobblehead. We went early so that we could make sure he got the bobblehead. It was the World Series MVP bobblehead. You know, Zobrist hit the double down the left field line, and he does the little jumpy thing, and his helmet comes off at second base. So it was that bobblehead. And so he got that bobblehead and then got Ben Zobrist autograph on bobblehead night. So it was all in all a really good night. We got back late. We got to eat at a hamburger place that he's been wanting to go to. And so we went there. It lived up to the hype.
What was it?
Au Cheval.
Okay.
He watched, he was watching on Food Network one day, and they do the thing, that show where the best thing I've ever eaten or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And they were talking about the best burger they'd ever had. And one of the people, theirs was Au Cheval. So we went there. We had to wait 30 minutes at 1:45 in the afternoon. So I thought, it must be good. And it was.
Huh.
Best bacon I've ever had, man.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. It was fantastic.
You saw the World Series trophy. I saw you saw another gold glove yesterday. I saw.
Saw Don Kessinger's gold glove from, I want to say, 1970, maybe.
So we've seen Don's glove in his office. So which one's the original? Is it a replica for the players or what?
I'm guessing they get two, one for the team and one for
the... So they're both technically original.
I would guess. That's a good question. I wondered that last night. You probably could ask your friend Carolyn and find out some details on that.
Yeah,
I tweeted the photo to her.
Saw that.
It's really good. They've the Cubs built up. You've probably seen the park at Wrigley thing. For people who haven't been up here or you haven't been in a year or two, they've really started adding a lot of fan amenities. And they have this complex called the park at Wrigley. It's out kind of behind, I guess, sort of behind the left field, behind the third base line. And it's really well done. I mean, really cool. And they have a big team shop. And then you get to go in and you can see the trophy and you can see the rings and stuff. It's really cool. They did some cool stuff. But they've got, you know, like Chris Bryant's MVP award and like Hack Wilson's MVP award from back in whenever that was, the 20s or 30s or whatnot. So it's pretty cool. it's pretty cool. They had one of the things they had was Don Kessinger's Gold Glove from either 70 or 71. I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was really cool because Carson saw that and he goes, that's, you know, because he knew about Kessinger and stuff. So he saw that. And so it was cool. It was fun. He enjoyed looking at all the different trophies and things.
Maybe they'll get a win. I mean, I feel sorry for him. He hadn't got to sing the song yet. He hadn't had to do the deal. And I was the opposite as a kid. We've talked about it a little bit on the show over the course of our 1,700 episodes or whatever it is. But I hardly ever see the Saints lose when I go. I've got like an 85% winning percentage with the Saints, which is incredible because they suck.
Yeah, they should hire you. I'm telling you, teams should look into these things and go.
My first game that I remember was early 90s, and they beat the Seahawks. And then we went later in the year, and Dave Meggett ran all over them, and the Giants kicked the crap out of them. But for the most part, I see wins. It's uncanny.
That is. That's uncanny. The Saints, and you know people inside that organization, they should hire you. They should hire you as just a designated fan.
Just to sit in the front row by the guy with the whistle on his head.
16 times a year, you should just be there.
Oh, 16. I got to go on the road, too.
If you think you're winning because some cat's in the first row, you are.
First Braves game I remember, they beat the Cubs 1-0 on a Maddox shutout.
So Carson's there.
If I remember correctly, that was the first Braves game I remember. Because that would have been back at Fulton County in whatever year that would have been.
Oh, shoot.
What was Maddox's first year in Atlanta?
Oh, 93.
Okay. I remember 93 then, maybe.
Yeah, I remember it too.
I think I was 9, but yeah.
It's a good, that worked out real well for the Cubs. Yeah. Instead of signing Maddox to a deal, they signed Jose Guzman, Dave Plesac, Dave Smith, maybe like Greg Hibbard.
You still remember all this?
Oh, it was painful.
Is that the most painful acquisition situation you've ever had?
Yes.
As a fan?
Period. Numero uno. You knew how, if you watched the Cubs all the time, and I did, you knew in 92 how good Greg Maddox was going to be for a long time. And it wasn't like the Durant thing where I don't think it really mattered how much money the Thunder threw at Kevin Durant. He wasn't staying. Had the Cubs just anteed up a little bit, Greg Maddox would have stayed. No question about it.
I was just thinking about the Braves. Just thinking about the Braves here. We'll move on to something else in a second. But you think Todd Van Poppel ever sits around and goes, why not do that? Braves probably taking him with the first pick. Van Poppel says he won't sign with Atlanta. And then the Braves signed Chipper Jones instead?
Oh, I'm sure he thinks about it all the time. I mean, I would think by now he's come to peace with it, but yeah, I'm sure he thinks about it all the time.
And Sherholtz or whoever goes, yes, thank you.
Oh, can you imagine?
Attaboy, Todd.
Can you imagine? Wonder how often the Astros think, you know, if instead of taking Mark Appel, we had taken Chris Bryant, where would we be today? Because they're really good now.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't think about that one.
Yeah.
That's as good as the whole Grizzly, Steph Curry, all the people they could have taken over instead of Hashim to beat.
Now you're just being mean to Grizzlies fans.
It just stuck in my head. Just thought about it.
Could have taken Curry. Could have taken James Harden.
Ooh.
It's not just one guy for the Grizzlies in that scenario. It's like four. Sorry, Jeffrey, if you're listening.
Just constant reminders.
Yeah, they're everywhere. You can, if you're a Grizzlies fan, you almost can't watch the other team ever because there's like five people they could have taken that would have worked out.
If you were a Preds fan last night and you went to Bridgestone for the watch party, at what point would you have left?
Second period.
Okay.
4-0. I'd have said that's it, bro.
I don't even know if I'd have given it 4.
Well, they came back from 3 earlier in the series.
Nah.
Because game one was 3-0, and they eventually tied it before they got to let the lead get away.
Going to be tough now, because a game 7 back in Pitt is going to be very hard to win.
Yes. Yeah, I would have, I mean, if you're putting statistical analysis on it, winning last night would have been a much easier proposition if you will, than winning a game seven. But you get game six at your place, and if you win it,
one game,
and a game seven is so pressure filled for both teams that I don't know. You probably can throw a lot of that out. I don't know that there's anything that, you know what I mean? I mean, a game seven for everyone involved is so pressure packed and intense that probably what happened in the first six games just goes out the window.
Yeah, I agree with that. As long as Carson's not in the arena cheering for the Predators, they've got a chance that night. So that, and we'll continue to talk about that on the podcast. Obviously, on Monday we'll recap the week. He's going to see some soccer. He's going to see a couple other Cubs games. We'll see if they finally win one. But as we have a break in the podcast brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga, 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting and understands your market. Also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if the rate goes down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can contact him at 662-234-2704 or by email, jlowe@communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide. OUB provides all the technology and products you can want, but with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person. No 10 buttons to push, no 5-minute wait. OUB also has the absolute best free checking account you'll find anywhere. It's called Kasasa. It comes complete with cashback or interest options. If you have a Kasasa account, OUB will refund your ATM fees nationwide. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. If you're looking to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, give Michael a call. He is a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi, works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. He's by far the largest broker of land in our state. Michael's from the Delta, lives in the Jackson area, travels to Lafayette County all the time. No one knows the recreational and timberland tract in Mississippi better than he does. Go to his site. It's gotland.com. The land market's really hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now's the time. Give him a call. Let him explain the process. He says if he can't earn your business in that meeting, he doesn't deserve it. His phone number is 662-719-3967. You can visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. Speaking of realtors, the podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. He is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. It's harryalexander.com. You can filter through by what you're looking for. The results that you'll get after you do that filter search are updated daily. And then let Harry do the rest. It's ha@harryalexander.com. Tell him you heard about it on the podcast. And he'll take great care of you, make sure you get a deal in the Oxford market that you're happy with both now and long down the road.
So yesterday in Memphis, Braden Thornberry, his first career PGA Tour event, his first career PGA Tour round, was two under at the turn, started on the back, had a couple birdies about midway through the back nine, had a rougher front nine, a 3-over, finishes 1-over for the day. I think that was tied for 66, so decent chance today with a good round to make the cut. I see this morning, again, it's 9:15 a.m., Jonathan Randolph, he was an afternoon time yesterday. It's a morning time today. He is 3-under. He is currently tied for 12th, so I followed around Braden a little yesterday, talked to Chris Malloy, said that on the back, just didn't really show any nerves at all, said that he didn't miss a golf shot, had a couple putts lip out, didn't roll it as well, and then kind of came home with a little tougher front. But good first day for Braden. Again, he is the Haskins Award winner, which is basically the Heisman Trophy for men's golf. So not a bad few months for Mr. Thornberry. Individual national champion, Heisman Trophy, and he also won the Jones Cup, which It's kind of the amateur masters, if I had to give it some type of equivalency for people to understand. So here quickly, he is checking off a lot of boxes on what's left in his amateur career.
Yeah, that's having a pretty good year. That's having a year that I suspect he'll talk about or be asked about 40 years from now.
It's a great course to start. Is, you know, a course that he knows, a course he's played 30, 40, 50 times. I think he might even be tried for the course record there over the years. So should be comfortable today. I did not notice a lot of nerves. And then the field's pretty good up there. I followed around Phil Mickelson for a while yesterday, followed around Adam Scott, Ricky Fowler. They were in a group yesterday morning. So good attendance, some big galleries, and some nice names in Memphis for that tour event. A lot of people using it as a warm-up for the U.S. Open, which is next week at Erin Hills in Wisconsin. So anyway, Braden is an afternoon time today. They take the top 70 in ties after today to make the cut for the weekend. Since he is an amateur, he gets reimbursed for his expenses. However, he does not collect a paycheck. I tell you, Neil, if I was like a top 15, top 20 finisher and they kind of threw that money in front of me, my amateurism would be in very much doubt all of a sudden.
No doubt. I'd be declaring myself pro instantly.
Yeah. Hey, Braden, you can get back that whole $1,200 for your room and all that stuff. Or, hey, here's a check for $234. Your call. But enjoy your junior year at Ole Miss. We'll be seeing you soon.
And give me the $234, please. Yeah. It's been real in Oxford.
Yeah. When he was two under after 18, like, I wanted to walk over to Chris and go, "You a little worried right now? Just wondering, would you like him to throw a couple bogeys up on the front?" I'm just kind of.
What is he going to do? Is he going to go pro, or is he going to play another year?
I think he's still here for now. I don't think he's going to announce turning pro anytime in the next week or so or anything. If you made me guess, and it's not even a really educated guess, it's strictly my guess, I think he plays most or all of another season and then maybe goes after that. Just gotcha. A guess. But, you know, he's just a sophomore. I mean, he's like 19.
Yeah.
Remarkable. Cool story. Good stuff.
His is a great story.
Yeah, he was on the podcast last week. If you missed it, you can check it out there. All right, got a couple different things here. One incredibly serious, one funny. Where do you want to go next, Neil?
Let's get the serious over with.
All right, by the way, it's not even really a secret. What we're waiting on are the other responses from the NOA, from the Notice of Allegations, Barney Farrar, Hugh Freeze, and others. People have filed FOIs. We're one of those, and we kind of think it might be soon. So whenever we get those, we will get them to you.
We thought it was going to be yesterday.
Yeah, I thought it might be yesterday. I still think it might be today. So again, whenever they're there, you can all read them. I mean, we'll have some analysis, but everybody can read for themselves. I don't think they'll be 125 pages long. Probably be a lot easier to understand, frankly. Barney's is the one that's interesting because, I mean, look, let's just keep it real here. Hugh Freeze is going to say whatever Ole Miss says. That makes all the sense in the world. But
I mean, I'll be shocked if it doesn't essentially mirror.
Yeah, Ole same Miss's exact words almost. So
yeah, yeah.
But Barney's is the one. We've heard some things about it. I don't anticipate some huge rollover on anyone, some huge gotcha moment, frankly. I think it's going to be fairly in line as well. But we will see when it comes out. That's just some things I've heard from some different people. All right. The act was despicable, so I don't really want to talk about that. But I'm so engaged by the journalism of it, and we'll try to keep this as mainstream as possible to not talk complete inside baseball. What are your reactions to the Oregonian and the way they've handled this pitcher story up there?
You're going to have to forgive me here. You're going to have to fill me in like you probably are a lot of other people.
You hadn't heard any of this at all?
I haven't.
Okay, hold on. Let me pull it up where I'm reading from the article.
Okay.
One second. Because I don't want to get any of this wrong. I want to be exact as I'm writing this, or as I'm talking about this. So the Oregonian in Oregon, Oregon State pitcher Luke Heimlich had a great year, like an 0.73 ERA, maybe the top pitcher in the country. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
It's going to be a fairly decent pick next week. He's 21 years old. He's from Washington. So the Oregonian did a profile on him, interviewed him multiple times, talking about baseball, talking about his pitching prowess, all that stuff. Normal sports editor stuff. So The Oregonian, though, on every profile is a newspaper rule. Whether it's the pitcher, whether it's the mayor, anyone they profile, they do background checks on. Just to check, see what's there. Something, frankly, I've never experienced or never even thought about. Was that something in Birmingham or Mobile or anywhere else?
No.
Okay.
I don't recall ever doing background checks on, like, you know, when I was covering Auburn, for example, we never did a background check.
Yeah, wait, would you have background checked Ronnie Brown, I guess, is the...
No.
Okay, well, they do there. They say it's everybody, no matter what. 0.76 ERA, a lot of stuff. Critical week. They play Vanderbilt starting this weekend in the Super Regionals. All right, here's what happened, though. When they did the background check, looking to see exactly the timeline here, they ran Heimlich's name through the Oregon Courts database and came up with this. Heimlich had been cited in April for failing to update his sex offender registration in Benton County, which is the county that Corvallis, Oregon is in.
Okay.
Oregon State University. The Oregonian requested court documents in Washington State where the molestation occurred. What happened was, it appears when Heimlich was 15 years old, he molested a six-year-old. And Oregon State has not verified if they knew this or not heading in. Pat Casey said yesterday he would only answer baseball questions. Oregon State not saying much about it at all. So they found this out basically last week, the Oregonian. And what happened was, in Oregon, the way the rules work is, if you are a sex offender, you have to register when you move to the state, and then you have to, I don't know if it's recertify, but you have to check in, however you want to put it. For layman's terms, you have to check in every so often. Well, when he came to Oregon, he did certify and followed that rule. However, when he didn't check back in, he was cited, and that's how this popped up. The way I understand it is, it would not have popped up otherwise had he just checked in and followed his status. So he was a juvenile. He's not in jail. He's playing for Oregon State. But the way...
low-risk sex offender.
The way Washington does it, though, is if the act is heinous enough, essentially, they don't seal the documents even if you're a juvenile. So that's why it popped up.
Okay. So the act must have been...
Yeah, I mean, you can read the story. I'm not repeating it on the podcast. They even use some of the victim's words in the story. No, thank you. Not going there.
No, I'm searching it now.
Okay. So they haven't announced a rotation yet. It appears he's going to pitch against Vanderbilt. It's something that happened how many ever years ago? He's 21, so 6 years ago. Comes out the week before the draft, the week of the Super Regionals, the paper with a big story yesterday on why they're doing it now, their reasonings for it, and all these different things. Interesting journalism debate, because he's not going to jail today. It's simply becoming public today. But I thought about it last night, and I said, you know, if you cover it up, you're covering it up. If you don't write it, you're doing that. You're going way on that side of things. And while I'm sure fans are emotional, they're pissed. Fan short for fanatic. I'm not criticizing, just saying. The timing is incredibly strange, and the Oregonian is basically saying that fans who invest their time and their money should know who they are rooting for.
Yeah, and as you were talking, I was finding, I read the quotes. I mean, it's a newspaper policy, something they do all the time. They probably...
I'm just going to ask this, because it's so out of the norm of anything I've heard. You think they're lying about the background check? You think they heard it, and then they're using that as an excuse?
Probably not.
Okay.
Because that would be too easy for it to pop up.
Any former employer or anything. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you didn't find this. You didn't find this. You didn't find this. My suspicion is that they ran his stuff expecting to come back with nothing. Not even thinking about it. I don't know anybody. I do know some people there. It's a paper with a great reputation.
It is.
In the field. I suspect it came back and people said, oh, God, now what?
Yeah, everybody, let's go in a room and figure this out.
Yeah, there probably was a meeting of about five or six people that started with just kind of stone silence. And then what do we do now? And then you write the story. And I'm sitting here reading the story as we talk. It's a really well-written, thorough, well-balanced story. It doesn't have any gotcha journalism to it.
No, I'll read you a couple. Are you reading the actual story or are you reading the why we published?
I think I'm reading the first
story. I've got the editorial column on why we published, and it says... Okay.
I don't have that.
Okay. The story also puts the spotlight on the university's admissions policies. We discovered that several of the teams that Oregon State competes against have stricter rules about whether felons can play college sports. Oregon State has still not made clear whether its athletic department knew about Heimlich's conviction and decided he should have a second chance, or whether the college's system for identifying sex offenders on campus failed to alert university officials. We think it is important to understand how our institutions handle these types of sensitive cases. The publication timetable was driven solely by our knowledge of the events. We finished the reporting and editing late last night, and we set publication time for this morning. Moran, the journalist, first uncovered the Benton County citation on May 18th. The court records that formed the backbone of the story arrived only last week. Moran teamed with investigative reporter Brad Schmidt to review the documents, to interview Oregon State officials and coaches, and to attempt to reach Heimlich and his family. They also worked quickly to interview officials at other colleges and universities to add important context of how institutions handle matters such as this. After we didn't hear back from Heimlich, we asked if he wanted to have a family member or representative respond on his behalf. Text messages sent to his number this week were marked red, but were never returned. This is a tragic story on so many levels, but we believe the crime against a young, innocent, and defenseless child had to be disclosed, and that we had an obligation as journalists to disclose it.
I side with the journalism there. I really do. I mean, I know how he was 15. He was a juvenile. He's been processed and all of that. And I get it.
Best I remember, Daniel Hood wasn't actually involved in the act, was just in the room, but it's a similar thing to Ole Miss and Tennessee people had to deal with that time. With him.
Yeah. And they had to make decisions, and there was, the coach that was recruiting him for Ole Miss at the time did not want reporting to be done. But if you're, I agree with them. It is a very valid question. And even if the answer is in the affirmative that yes, we knew about it, we decided to take him anyway. Okay. Why? Is a fair question. And if the answer is we didn't know about it, it's a fair question to say, what are your policies on student athletes, on students, on faculty members, on staff? What is your policy? That's what newspapers and journalism is for. I don't really have a problem with it. It's tragic. I agree completely. It's awful.
What do you do with Pat Casey today?
I'm not saying that the young man in question doesn't deserve a second chance. And they even quoted they did a really thorough job in this initial story. They quoted a psychologist saying extremely low risk of
additional
of him doing it again. The likelihood of reoffending is very small, said psychologist Michael Caldwell, who lectures at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. At 5 years, the recidivism rate for another sex crime hovers at 2.75%.
Wow.
It's because juvenile sex offenders tend to mature and respond well to intervention. They do a really thorough job here. If that pops up and you don't report it and explore what it means, then you not only didn't do your job, but you displayed tremendous bias in the process.
What if you're Pat Casey? Oregon State head coach.
Well, then I have to know the answer to the following question. Did I know about it? If I knew about it and we made the decision, look, if the institution...
Either way, do you pull the kid off the field at this point?
No. Let me finish. I don't pull him off the field if we knew about it. If we as an institution knew about it, and made the decision that, you know what, we believe in the young man, We believe in the second chance. As heinous as the crime was, we're not going to hold that against him for the rest of his life. He's been processed as a juvenile. We're moving on. If I've made that decision as an institution, no, I stand behind him. And I said, we made a decision. We knew about it. You may not agree with that, but that's the decision that we made. Now, then as an institution, you can't be shocked when there's backlash.
What if you didn't know about it?
Well, then now you have a decision to make. Because now you have to make the decision that you should have been making back then. Now you have to say, was he 5 years removed? You have to say, do we stand by him or do we condemn him for what happened 5 years ago? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know.
Yeah, because then it gets into why don't we know? Whose fault is that? What happened? Let's dig into the process.
Did you not know because you asked and he didn't volunteer it? Or did you not know because you didn't do your due diligence? Or is that your due diligence? It's a question that, you know, if you could, you'd love to ask a Ross Bjork right now, a Lynette Johnson. You'd love to say, not just that, but Jeffrey Vitter, the people at Ole Miss, when you admit a student into school, do you run a criminal background check? Any student.
Yeah. Do you know who you're putting on your campus?
Yeah. I mean, when you hire, I suspect when you hire a faculty member.
Yeah, background check.
You're interviewing for the dean of engineering position at Ole Miss.
You'll look around their past a little bit.
But do you run a criminal background check? I mean, you ask them to disclose felonies or whatnot, but what if they have one and they don't?
Mm-hmm.
Do you literally do what the Oregonian says that it does, which is they run one through the court systems? I don't know the answer to that.
Pat Casey, great coach, normally pretty nice, but can be a media hothead. Feels like this is probably going to blow up at some point in the next week and a half.
Well, that's a mistake on his part. He needs to have, regardless of what the facts are, they need to have a very rational response. The whole attacking the media, in this case, for doing its job, and from what I can read at first glance, doing it pretty well.
Yeah, to this point, there hasn't been a blowout. To this point, he said, I'll only answer Vanderbilt questions, and the best I can tell, I haven't watched the video, the only question directed around Heimlich was someone asked, will he pitch in the Vanderbilt series, and I think there was an affirmative answer.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. I mean, as a reporter, you want the people that you talk to talk, but if they make a decision, whether it's mandated from above or what, that, hey, we're not going to discuss this right now, okay. Say that up front, not discussing anything other than baseball, and then as a reporter, you have a decision to make. Well, do I continue to ask the question? Or do I? What you do is you ask the question once in an open format so that everyone knows that you and your media outlet asked the question. And then when you get an answer like that, what you try to do is go through back channels and say, hey, are we still not talking about this? Is that still your stance? Would love to get some clarity on these things. You don't make it where it's a grandstanding deal, but you continue to ask. It's like, you know, when we had the deal with Laramie Tunsil before when all the stuff with Cannon Motors first happened. And after a while, it became kind of a battle with Ole Miss. You know, they'd say, who do you want to talk to? And at the end of each practice, and we would say, Laramie Tunsil. Well, he's not available. Who do you want to talk to? We want to talk to Laramie Tunsil. Well, we're going to give you Mike Hilton. Well, we've already talked to Mike Hilton 30 times. That's not the story. And we never got to this point in large part because it's a very nice beat, frankly. The people that are on the beat, they're just not a lot of hotheads on it. There would have been other beats in the country that would have said, well, screw it. We just won't talk to anybody. And we'll write that we requested to speak to Tunsil and that he wasn't made available. And this will turn into a Donnybrook, if you will.
Yeah.
So Oregon State's best bet is to have a policy on this. They're going to eventually, as an institution, they're going to have to answer these questions because other people are going to be asking. The problem is it's not just the newspaper. it's now fans. I assure you, there are fans of Oregon State athletics who are bothered by this, who will want to know, did you know? Take me through the decision-making process. It kind of happened here yesterday with the Cubs. I mean, it wasn't particularly comfortable because Carson, you know, was 10 years old and he was asking questions, and there were, you know, we were waiting in line and people were, the news was kind of breaking that the Cubs had asked Addison Russell to stay home, not to come to the ballpark while they investigated the claims on social media about, not about his infidelity, but about abusing his wife. I think fans feel like, hey, I pay money to come to these games. I invest in these games. I have a right to know who I am investing in.
Yeah, that's fair. So
I don't know. It's a fascinating, it's a really interesting, it's incredibly unfortunate. But it really, from a journalism standpoint, is fascinating, and how Oregon State handles it is fascinating. And if you're smart and you're working at an institution, another Power Five institution, and you're watching this story, if you're at Ole Miss and you've seen this story, this has come up in your staff meeting. Hey, what do we do? What would we do? Because here's an opportunity to learn and troubleshoot without you taking the heat. What would you do? I'm guessing that Ole Miss and most Power Five schools, in fact, LSU, Florida, everybody, I'm guessing they don't run criminal background checks on athletes that they signed the letters of intent.
Yeah. So,
would you think?
My guess is no. I'm actually going to ask in a minute, so we'll see. But we'll update you as it goes. Again, Oregon State plays Vanderbilt in Corvallis, Oregon this weekend. The winner advancing to the College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska. This podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company, serving the Oxford, Tupelo, and surrounding areas. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Some of their services include landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation installation, maintenance, and turf installation. They even do holiday lighting during the holiday season. So give them a call for a free quote. 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. If you sign an annual contract, mention the podcast. First Cut is on them.
Podcast also brought to you by John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions, knows where to put you on the fish you want to catch. Tuna Chaser Charters, 200 East 8, Slip C2 in Biloxi. You can check out their Facebook page or call 228-348-7817. Whether you're looking for a quick fishing trip inshore or a serious deep sea fishing excursion or anything in between, really, let John and the folks at Tuna Chaser Charters take care of you. The podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. The college football season getting closer, meaning tailgating season is as well. 7 South is owned by Kyle and Jordan Thornton. They're both Ole Miss alums, avid fans. They're equipped with the largest staff in the Grove, can service most any of your tailgating needs. They have SEC only and full season packages. Rental packages are available. They offer complete setup, game day concierge, post-game trash removal, equipment breakdown, and year-round storage. They'll set you up in the Grove, the Circle, or the outskirts of campus. If you ever give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. It's 7southtailgating.com. You can reach them at 662-321-1682. Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. Their attention to detail, their customer service, their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their site, it's comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749.
We were merciless in our shots at Jeffrey with the Fox print and the Hillary Fitzgerald things over the years, so no one immune. I tell you what struck me. I didn't see it till this morning, but post on the message board. I'm not going to give away the username, but thread with the subject title. So if you find out your girlfriend ... in the text is texting her ex that she broke up with 6 months ago very frequently, says they're still good friends. How do you handle that? And I tell you, what's funny about this, and look, everybody can relate it to some instance. I mean, male, female, age doesn't matter. You can remember when. It is amazing that when you're in this situation, you have such clouded thoughts and you try to justify everything imaginable. And when you are not emotionally involved, you are like Dr. Drew on Loveline going up, dumper. You have no emotion. Like, you completely understand the situation. You know what's going on, and you can logically and realistically assess it and give the result in about 3.5 seconds.
Exactly.
It is amazing.
It's incredible.
Because I read that and I go, yeah, get rid of her. Done. I can tell you more about that situation than you can by the time you tell me about that situation.
But when you're in the middle of it.
Well, but no. No. Come to find out later in the thread, actually, she had already broken up with him. Said that last week she had came over, like reorganized his house or cleaned his kitchen or something, and then stood in the middle and said that she was no longer feeling it and broke up with him when they had been discussing marriage previously before that.
Okay, so wait a minute. They've been discussing marriage.
Correct.
She came over to his apartment.
That is correct.
Cleaned the kitchen.
To the best I understand it.
Because cleaning the kitchen sucks. Like, I don't know about you, but I dread every day the process of unloading the dishwasher. And then I do it. It only took like 2 minutes. I'm like, it wasn't so bad. But the next day I go right back to dreading it. So she goes and she cleans his kitchen. And then stands in the middle of said kitchen or other part of the apartment and says, I'm just not feeling it. And then he finds out that she's been texting the ex-boyfriend.
Well, no, he already knew that she'd been texting the ex-boyfriend. He simply made this post last night as a reactive measure to see what he should have done in the situation and what the opinions are. So he won't make the same mistake. It had already happened. His quote on, we had some questions, myself and other message boarders. And he says, yeah, we were exclusive. She was talking about marriage and how excited she was. She told me casually that her and her ex were texting a lot, and she was initiating some of the text. I told her I was not okay with that and secretly considered dumping her. She asked for grace, and I gave her another chance as long as she ended it. Said she ended it, but then they were texting about some clothing thing, and I got frustrated about it. The next time I saw her, she came over, reorganized my house, and then dumped me in my kitchen, saying she just wasn't, quote, feeling it anymore. She was ready to get married the week before. Was crazy about me. It sucks to have been broken up with, especially when you gave her a second chance. But really glad I didn't have to spend the rest of my life with that migraine. I already had probably a few other words than migraine, but sure. And here's the bad part. She wasn't considering marriage, and she wasn't crazy about you.
Yeah.
It sucks. Been there, but no.
No. And she probably was texting the ex-boyfriend as a backup plan.
See, no, I think she liked the ex the whole time. It was just waiting to see if the ex would take her back.
So she was using kitchen
boy. Using them both. Hey, I'm talking marriage with my current fella, so you ex, if you don't give me a chance, I'm going to go lock it down with him. And then
we're committing to something here, damn it. We're just not sure what.
Either way, we're doing some committing.
So she, in other words, she gave a verbal commitment in May to Kitchen Boy.
Yeah.
But she wanted to continue to take official visits.
And someone that she'd taken a lot of unofficial visits with over the years.
Yeah, she took a lot of unofficial visits. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
I'm just saying. She was not the recruit who showed up his sophomore year and said, this is the place for me, no visits.
Don't think so.
No. Respect my decision. No questions, no visits.
Yeah. The notes app was not her friend.
When did the whole respect my decision thing, what does that mean? I mean, I always want to tweet back at the kid. I would never do it because it would just infuriate people with who doesn't respect it. What does that even mean? How, what,
Well, and the no questions thing doesn't stop people from asking questions whatsoever. They still call just like they would anyway.
Yeah. No questions, no interviews. Respect my decision.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know. I'm really not making fun. I mean, at all. It amazes me about how you can always be logical unless it's you, and then you find every justification imaginable for
sure.
Why no? It's this. It's that.
It's why Little League parents exist.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You watch your kid play Little League, and you're like, he's gonna play for the Phillies. You watch another parent's kid play Little League, and you're like, he can't catch the ball. I'm surprised he can tie his shoe in the morning. That parent thinks his kid's playing for the Phillies.
Yeah, there was a couple times when I was a coach or like around the leagues or just around kids, and their parents would go, hey, my kid's great. I look and go, no, not really. And he goes, hey, well, what can we do? And I'm like, kind of had the devil on my shoulder. I'm like, you know, there's a perfect game combine in Atlanta. Really ought to take him over there, see how that goes. See how he stacks up with the other kids and not so well.
Full circle here. It's like watching Nolan Arenado take BP. You know, sometimes you'll think, even at 47, you'll think, you know, if I just focused on one sport, really dug in back in the day, who knows? And then I watch something like that, I'm like, nah, I was never going to do that. I'm all good. I'm at peace.
I don't know.
Had to come off his bat 125 miles an hour.
It wasn't 125 miles an hour.
Holy hell, it looked like it. I'm telling you, the ball made it from the plate to the bleacher a second and a half.
Yeah, that was what I was reminded of from a different sport, same thing yesterday, is watching PGA Tour pros up close, and you go, yeah, we don't play the same game. That's
no,
different.
No, you don't play anything resembling the same game.
Yeah, it doesn't look the ball doesn't look like that when it comes off my club, but sure.
that's just incredible. I mean, you could go to like a country club anywhere, right?
Yeah,
and you know the best guy there, whoever that is, the guy that
dang good,
Greenwood, Mississippi, the country club, the guy that is the best player at that country club.
Probably one of the top 2 or 3% of people in the world that play golf.
Yeah, really good player. You watch him play up close, and then you go watch Phil Mickelson or Ricky Fowler play up close, and you're like, they're not even the same. They're not even in the same stratosphere. They're not even playing anything resembling the same game.
Well, that's what's amazing about watching Braden Thornberry, a 19-year-old from Olive Branch, Mississippi, is he hits the ball, and you go, yeah, you look like the rest of them. Yeah.
See, that would be, and I'm sure he's played so much that he knew he'd be fine. But like, you wonder, like in his mind yesterday or Thursday, whenever that was, when he tee off for the first time at an event against those dudes.
Yeah, I mean, you're out there. There's nobody big in your group, but the group, you know, right in front of you has like Bryson DeChambeau. Two groups in front of us got Ricky Fowler, and you walk up to the tee and they go, from Olive Branch, Mississippi, Braden Thornberry now playing or whatever. And
yeah, you wonder, does he think,
Ooh,
do I belong? I mean, am I supposed to? Really, should I be here? It has to. It has to be like with the thoughts that goes through a. I was reading a story on Chris Bryant yesterday, and he was talking about his first major league game. You know, he struck out 3 times, and he admitted that he kind of thought to himself a little bit of, you know, maybe I wasn't quite ready for this. You know, you don't see the same pitches that you see in spring training, and you're suddenly facing a major leaguer throwing a major league changeup over and over and over and over, not making a mistake with one, throwing them over and over and over. And it has to be something you think of. And it just, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
I wonder if it was less nerves because he was probably better than the other two guys in his group, and it wasn't a big name in your group with you. You're just kind of playing.
I think people like him are just wired differently.
Well, that's true, too.
And I just think, even though he's a really laid back, I mean, comes across as a really laid back, nice guy and stuff. And I'm not saying he's not, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying I think people like him are wired differently than other people.
Well, yeah, and once he gets on there and he's actually hitting balls, I mean, you're not successful unless you're just competitive as hell.
Very competitive, very locked in, very confident. And you can be confident without being arrogant.
They gave him Kip Henley for a caddy yesterday, a real, real talker. That's good. Braden likes to talk constantly while he's playing, so it gave somebody to kind of rattle stuff off of him. Because, I mean, that's something that kind of gets overlooked by some people. When you can get a caddy out there, get somebody that's going to mesh with your mindset a little bit. If he's over there with a mute, it probably would have screwed him up for a day.
Yeah, someone who just break the
yeah, make some jokes, kid around, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his quote to PGAtour.com last night was, Phil was on number two, and I saw the crowd following him, so I wanted to watch him hit a shot or two, so that's still pretty cool, but I'm trying to stay in my own lane. So he still noticed what was around him.
Yeah, that's a cool quote.
Yeah.
Because you're still up there. You're still a 19-year-old kid watching Phil Mickelson. That part doesn't change.
Yeah, you're on the same leaderboard. Like, you know, you're same deal. But
yeah, and be like, you know, you're a rookie on a basketball court and you're playing the Warriors. You still look over there for a minute. I'll be damned. That's Steph Curry and Kevin Durant.
That was the first time I'd been that close to Mickelson for a number of holes to kind of watch him interact and play. And it's why he's kind of known as the Arnold Palmer of this generation, even though he's, you know, off the course, people have a lot of different opinions, but he's always the fan favorite on the course. He interacts constantly. It's between holes. It's walking down the fairway. It's looking. It's high-fiving. It's winking. It's fairly amazing to stay as locked in while also being so cognizant of the people around him at the same time. It was fairly fascinating compared to a lot of the other players that intentionally ignore anything around them.
He's just always struck me as that kind of guy. And now he's had so much success in the sport that, you know, he understands that people are coming to see him and to interact with him. And
yeah,
he's probably gotten to the point where he understands his role as an ambassador.
He's a showman as much as anything at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's grinding for an eighth place finish. He doesn't need the money. I'm either going to win or I'm going to lose. And in the meantime, let's entertain a little bit.
Yeah, he knows people are coming to see him.
Yeah, it was like yesterday. It was, you know, a lot of let's go, good job, bravo. But 80% of the comments were thanks for coming. Thanks for coming, sure. Phil. Over and over and over again.
Sure, I get that completely.
Yeah. You don't have to come to Memphis. So thanks. So anyway,
and it is cool that he went.
Yeah, they've got a good field. Again, you had Adam Scott, Ricky Fowler, Daniel Berger was defending champion, and then Phil and Jim Furyk and some others in the afternoon. So that carries on through the weekend. We'll see if Jonathan and Braden make the cut. We hope to get some more information regarding Ole Miss's responses, other people's responses by the end of the day. But either way, it's coming at some point. So stay into Rebel Grove for that. Yes, Neil?
Real quick, the podcast has been brought to you by the Rebel Locker Room, West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It's the place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear, all the colors, all the styles. It's there. As we mentioned, football season coming up. We talked about 7 South tailgating. We talked about getting your gear at the Rebel Locker Room. You can get your tickets at OleMissTix.com. That's OleMissTix.com. Last but not least, the podcast has been brought to you by Grenada Nissan. Just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, great lease deals, great service after the sale. Gene and Sandy Grass, great friends of this site, of this podcast. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, give them a look. You'll be glad you did. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
We will podcast again on Monday. There's a good bit of stuff at RebelGrove.com, including recruiting, baseball, and more. There's an official basketball, unofficial basketball visitor, Neil, correct, as well, somewhere in Mississippi.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm working on this picket thing. I know there's different accounts. I hate using this word because I know it will open up 7,000 joke threads, but I can't think of a better word.
It's fluid.
If you can, please. It's fluid.
Yeah. Last thing. Ready? You saw them both, I'm sure. If you had to deal with one or the other, which snake account would you rather have dealt with? The woman who trapped it from the house in a pillowcase, or the one that tried to come in the guy's car window up the hood?
Okay. Pillowcase lady is crazy.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think this was in North Carolina. The snake was in the house. She grabbed a pillowcase and, frankly, pretty deftly was able to capture the critter in the bag.
Was it poisonous?
I mean, I doubt it, but I was not aware either way. I don't know.
Now, the dude in it was at Atlanta, I think, right?
I don't know.
Okay.
Guy's driving a truck, snakes on the hood, and it...
And he just starts filming it.
Yeah.
And his hand's not even shaking.
It's coming up the hood, and then it kind of comes around to the window.
Yeah, looking in like, hey, can I come in and bite you?
And he stopped. He slowed down and came to a stop.
Yeah, just being cool. I would have been swerving. I would have been the Dukes of Hazzard.
Would you have sped up?
Would you have slammed on
the brakes?
I'm not sure what would have happened after I went into cardiac arrest. I don't know what would have happened with the rest of my
body. Okay, here's the thing, though. How do you eventually get out of this car? You call someone?
You make peace with your maker.
I mean, snakes supposedly can get as thin as a piece of paper. What if he starts coming into your cab? Go out the other way and run?
I mean, I don't know. I was so in awe.
If you had something in your cab to potentially knock him off the hood, would you have risked rolling down the window and trying to poke him with it?
No, because then he's in your lap biting.
No, I'm talking about when he was still on the hood. If you prepared.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think I would have pulled over someplace, stopped, and run screaming like a little girl.
Out the other door.
Go the other way.
Out the other door, though.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going through him and his door.
Oh, no. He now owns that door.
Okay.
What would you have done?
Well, I'd rather have dealt with that because that I know it's not in my house. I don't have to burn the neighborhood down. We'll eventually figure this out. The pillowcase lady, I'm going to have a hard time going to bed tonight because with that.
See, I can't because there's a – what if that was Mama Snake? And now the baby's – are in the house, and they're pissed that Mama's not there.
She appeared to just release it out in the yard, though.
So how do you know it's not going to come back in for its babies?
Yeah, I think it was just a catch-and-release situation.
Yeah. I mean, you're in a tough spot there, because if you have the snake, and you kill the snake that was inside your house, what do its relatives get revenge? But if you release the snake, it already got in your house once. It can get in again. It's a problem. It's a quandary.
And the snake sees that you're just the nice lady that takes it outside.
I guess it's possible the snake would think, well, you know, I did need to get back out. I got lost. And that's possible. That's not nearly as likely as the snake saying, no, I was in there for a reason, bitch, and I'm coming back.
Yeah. Well,
it's a catch-22, Chase.
It is. All right. We covered a lot of ground today on the podcast. Thanks for hanging in with us. We'll be back on Monday. Neil will still be in Chicago. We'll do it just like this, and then he will return to the Clark Ford Studios the next day. So go Cubs. Let Garson finally see a win. Probably we'll see a fire win just to win some other sport, and the Cubs continue to lose.
You'll know that it's bad luck if they lose today. Win tomorrow and lose Sunday.
Yeah.
You'll know we're on to something.
That's a good point. That's where he gets hired. We call Theo and work something out. So, all right. For Neil, for Chase, talk to you on Monday.